will go ahead and call this meeting of the Siskiyou County Planning Commission to order. Please rise for the pledge. Ready, pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Ms. Janine.
Commissioner Hart.
Here.
Commissioner Mello.
Here.
Commissioner Lindler.
I am here today.
Commissioner Veal.
Here.
Chair Fowle.
Sitting in my seat. Minutes from June 18.
I move to approve.
Commissioner Mello moves to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Veal seconds. Any further discussion on the minutes? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same.
I abstain. I was absent.
Let the record show, 4 in the affirmative, 1 abstention. Minutes are approved. At this time, are there any unscheduled appearances, individuals wishing to address the commission on items not on the agenda? Seeing none. You can see in the printout of our agenda, items 6 and 7 and 8, presentation of documents, availability of public records, and our public hearing protocol. I will read item number 9, the right of appeal statement. Projects heard at this planning commission meeting may be subject to appeal within 10 calendar days of today's meeting. If the 10th day falls on the weekend, the appeal must be received the following business day. Please contact the county clerk for information. Appeals must be submitted to the county clerk's office together with the appeal fee of $1,250. If you challenge the environmental review or the project proposal in court, you may be limited to raising only those issues raised at the public hearing or in written correspondence delivered to Siskiyou County Planning at or prior to the public hearing. Ms. Lyne, do we have any changes to the agenda?
No.
Okay. Then we'll jump right in to new business, agenda item 1, proposal to abandon Bailey Hill Road, RA-2502. Is this Ms. Jarrett?
Is mine,
Mr. yeah. Mr. Phelps, all right.
Hello and good morning. James Phelps, Senior Planner, County of Siskiyou. This project, as you stated, is a proposed road abandonment located at exit 793. It's the Bailey Hill Road, Lemus Road exit on I-5 heading north towards Oregon. The property consists of 17.25 acres of AG1 land. The road itself is a paved road. It's a frontage road along the I-5. It is 1.28 miles long. In order for the road to be abandoned, the Planning Commission will have to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding certain findings. The first finding is that this project would be consistent with the general plan. The second would be that it's not useful as a non-motorized transportation facility. And the third is that it's not necessary for future or present prospective public use. When staff looked at this, we looked at the likelihood of the road being used. In looking at the Caltrans data, Caltrans has estimated approximately 8,400 vehicles pass this area of I-5 heading north on a daily basis. So of that percentage, it's expected that a certain percentage might use that road during an emergency situation or just to pull out.
Jim, just to be clear, when you say pull out, it would be at the exit, at the top, not actually utilizing the road, because the road does not go to any public services.
Yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yes.
Just to be clear.
Yes. We did receive some public comments from public agencies. Caltrans expressed some concerns about there not being a gate put on the top of Bailey Hill Road and Lemus Road so that they could have room to do their maintenance work, in addition to repairing culverts, that sort of thing. It's my understanding that the party proponent would be open to allowing Caltrans access. Their primary concern is that they're having members of the public perhaps going onto that road for no legitimate reason, trespassing at times, and that sort of thing. Their hope is that if the road abandonment goes forward, that they'll be able to close that off to the public and allow easements for the existing land parcels around that road to still be able to access Bailey Hill Road, and also any public agencies that would need to use the road. So along Bailey Hill Road itself, there are 6 land parcels. 4 of those parcels are owned by the applicant. 1 parcel is owned by the railroad, Southern Pacific, and the final parcel is owned by the R Ranch Property Owners Association. We did not receive any comments from either 2 of those property owners. We are going forward with the assumption that they do not object to this proposed road abandonment. Figure 1 on your screen, Your Honors, is the zoning map for this area. The red line indicates where the road is and also where the counties, I guess basically the county owns all the land within the red line. This area is zoned AG1 and AG2. Can I get the next? This is just another view. This is a overhead view representation of I-5 heading north. You can see Bailey Hill Road is on the right-hand side. As stated before, a significant amount of traffic goes along the I-5. However, it's likely that the majority of that traffic would not be using Bailey Hill Road, as Chair Fowle had indicated. This is a map that was provided by Public Works Department when they initially received this request. It's been labeled just to make it more clear. You can see exit 73, that's where you would access Bailey Hill Road. You go up the exit and then be Lemus Road, Bailey Hill Road. It's also indicated on that diagram is the railroad crossing. One of the concerns when this project was brought forward was that the railroad wouldn't lose access to their property for maintenance. This is just another view of the area. As you can see, we're looking north on I-5. There's the exit 793 to Lemus Road, and you can see Bailey Hill Road meandering there to your right. This is another view of that intersection. At the top of the off-ramp, Bailey Hill Road heading south. So this is the first parcel owned by the applicant. You can see it straddles Lemus Road and Bailey Hill Road intersection there. And that's just another view of the next property. This is parcel number 2, directly underneath parcel number 1. Keep going. Thank you, Rachel. This is just parcel number 3. And then that's the final parcel owned by the applicant. As you can see, the applicant owns a majority of the land adjacent to Bailey Hill Road. They're most likely to be affected by any road usage by the public. And they're most likely to benefit from this project. Next slide. So Southern Pacific Railroad only owns the land immediately adjacent to the railroad, but it does the railroad does cross over Bailey Hill Road, and there was concerns that by the California Public Utilities Commission that there'd be no obstructions for interference with railroad operations, and it's my understanding that the applicants are intending to allow the railroad to continue.
They have a great relationship.
And they have a great relationship.
Yes.
Next slide. And so this is the R Ranch property. They have a little Texas panhandle corner there of their property, jets over by the railroad. And again, they also access Bailey Hill Road, and it's important that they have continued access to this road in the event of an emergency or evacuation is necessary. Is that all?
Yeah.
Before you continue,
yes,
right,
sir.
There in that last map, because I'm pretty sure I've been on that road. Your map shows Bailey Road going across the railroad track and then going back north and east.
Yes.
What's the road that heads south down into Hornbrook that's not showing on your map?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I use Google Earth. And
that's also what I'm on right now, and there's clearly where it crosses the railroad tracks. It continues south and runs all the way down into Hornbrook.
Is it a dirt road, or is
it? It's a dirt road.
It is a dirt
maybe
road,
that's
so
right.
It's
yeah.
Technically not Bailey
there,
Road.
There's no, there's nothing. It goes
okay.
Through our ranches.
Because
yeah.
It looks in
yeah.
better shape than
yeah.
what continues
it's
north and northeast.
Is it our ranch?
That's
road.
Our ranch road.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it is not considered Bailey Hill.
No. No.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So one of the concerns with this road abandonment is that bridge. There is a bridge. There is a bridge, and I'm guessing it's here where all the trees are growing, right? Hutton Creek.
Yeah,
there's a bridge.
The packet said there was a picture of it, but there was no picture in the packet.
Yeah, I wasn't able to go out there to take a photo, but there is a bridge there. It'd have to be part of the road abandonment. And Caltrans did recommend that ownership of the road, should this abandonment go forward, be given over to the applicant, and they specified a parcel. However, we're not bound by that.
Caltrans or Cal Fire? Because according to the packet, Cal Fire is the one that made that statement.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. I wrote this a month ago, and I'm just out of memory here. You're right, Cal Fire indicated that it should be transferred to the adjacent parcel. As stated earlier during my oral report, there are three required findings. We have to find that it's consistent with the general plan, that it's not useful as a non-transportation facility, and it's not useful for a future or prospective public use. In terms of the general plan, it is consistent with the general plan for this area. We do have as a part of the general plan an old element called the scenic highways element. That is not going to be part of the updated general plan. So if we were to bind this project to the requirements of the scenic highway plan, which I believe is going to be defunct by the time this project is finalized, then the argument could be made that the scenic highway plan intended areas like this to remain open to the public for vista viewing or emergency parking, that sort of thing. However, staff does believe it's appropriate to say that this is consistent with the general plan at this time. In terms of whether or not it's useful as a non-motorized transportation facility, if that's a fancy word to say the road's not useful for people to bicycle on or ride horses on or walk on. There has been testimony. I know Supervisor Ogren said she taught her children to ride a bike there, that sort of thing. People do ride horses on there, so it's arguable that it is useful as a transportation or a non-motorized transportation facility. But on the other hand, you could say it is rarely used, you know, so it's one of those situations, and it's rare to have a project where it really is based on the discretion of the board and the planning commission, because either finding would be appropriate. You know, it would be supported by evidence either way. Regarding whether or not it's necessary for present or prospective public use, that same issue occurs. Obviously, it is useful to the public. You can imagine that during a snowstorm, people might want to park on that road. During an emergency, should the I-5 become unavailable, Bailey Hill Road could be modified to allow northbound traffic. At the same time, the likelihood of that occurring may be low, and the amount of people using that road may be minimal, to a point where a finding could be made that it is not useful for present or prospective public use. Staff is recommending for the CEQA exemption that the common sense exemption be used. I am available for additional questions if the board may deem appropriate.
I have a question, sir.
Go ahead. We're at questions of staff right now, or we can continue with the process. Your choice.
The scenic route, wasn't that no longer not funded? Because I was on the city council when this came through Mount Shasta, and we have the scenic route on a very short piece of road.
Well, the scenic routes still exist in the county. It's whether or not the scenic corridor or the scenic highways element will be going forward. And I think, I don't have the notes in front of me, but I think that was done in the 1970s or 80s. And I'm not sure that it applies anymore.
That's what I'm thinking, that they put the nicks on it, if you will. Thank you.
Okay. Any correspondence other than what is in the staff pack?
No, Chair Powell.
Okay. We don't have any other county departments here to offer arguments or evidence. Any other questions of staff by the commission before we open the public hearing? Okay, then I'll go ahead and open the public hearing, and proponents are given first crack at this, and I do have Mr. DeClerc as the first if you have anything to add, or we simply know you're in the room if we have questions.
Yeah.
Your choice.
Questions, I'm here. Okay. And the main reason we...
Go ahead and come on up. Okay. Make sure we get you on the record and make it official.
Okay. The reason we want this...
I'm sorry, for the record, I need your name and full address.
Stephen Charles DeClerc.
Thank you.
19224 Bailey Hill Road, Kornberg, California.
Thank you.
96044. Okay. Okay. The main reason we want this is for security. We've been robbed several times. People come off I-5, pull up our road. We've had armed robbery. We've had a housemaid at one time. We don't anymore. She was held at gunpoint and trying to take away in a car, and et cetera. We had a SWAT team up there. We've had our vehicles broke into, steering columns busted off in our barn. Just four-wheelers taken, just one thing after another coming up I-5. And we will honor all easements that are there now are honored, of course, that's by law anyways. And I am an R-Ranch member too. And the railroad piece that they talk about, I have under lease also. We have a great relationship with the railroad. We let them come in and out. They go through our other roads, upper road. We have no problems with that. We just want the the bathroom usage on that road is really bad, too. I get tired of having my guys and me cleaning up the toilet paper and the stuff, and then they, you know, it just, it's amazing. And that's the reason, and we will keep that bridge. It's just a little tiny bridge. I mean, it's not, maybe 6 feet wide, maybe, in good order for the Forest Service to go. Of course, we would want them there. And they have keys, of course, to all of our ranch and everything. And don't have much else to say than that. That we'll take good care of it, and it's going to save the county a lot of money.
I've got to wait to ask questions, but be prepared. I do have a couple questions for you.
Okay. Do you want me to stay here or sit down?
No, sit down. I've got to run through the process before we open up to that. Thank you, though. Thank you. Any other comments in support of the project? Any opponents present or in opposition to this? Okay. Therefore, you don't need to rebut, I don't think. I will go ahead and close the public hearing and open it up to the commission for questions, of which I have several.
I have one.
Okay.
Is the bridge a footbridge or a vehicle bridge?
It's a vehicle bridge.
It is?
Yes.
And it's usable?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Commissioner Beal.
Yeah, there's a couple questions. One is I noticed, I viewed the road and I drove on it and so forth. I see four mailboxes there.
Yes.
Obviously one is yours, and then there's a person down the road that...
That's Tommy Davis. He lives in one of our houses.
Okay. But nobody else is served by that road other than you and the...
And Tommy.
So is the mailbox that's for across the road?
No, all four are ours.
Oh, okay. All right.
The one across the road, she doesn't get mail there? No. And the old Namus house has a mailbox too, but there's nobody that lives in that house.
And one of the mailboxes is just an extra big one so they can put stuff in.
All right.
And one was Alphonse's, and in the day, which Tommy lives there, then it was ours.
And Betty Carlson.
So,
and
we got that too.
The other question, Lemus Road that goes straight out from that, does that serve anybody other than your...
No, that's us too.
That's all your, and nobody beyond that?
No, nobody beyond that.
Okay. So the other thing is the chain of events, right, what would happen. If the county abandons the road, that property then becomes county's property, correct?
No.
That's
my question.
Who owns the property?
Can I ask a quick question before you continue?
Okay,
so my first question. Bailey Road, where it's on your property, is it a county easement, or did the county actually purchase it from the previous landowners and the county owns it and you don't pay taxes on it? Or do you pay taxes on that acreage?
Sheriff Powell, I can answer that.
Okay.
Bailey Hill Road actually sits on county-owned land. The county received that land from the state when they were building the I-5. After they finished the I-5, that section of land was deeded to the county.
That's the old highway.
State acquisition encompassed that land. When I-5 finally was finalized and built, that additional was granted to the county then?
Yes.
Okay.
So I will be paid.
Okay, well, that was my question, which leans into, I think, where Commissioner Beal was.
So if it's accomplished that the Bailey Hill Road is abandoned, then that becomes county property on...
It still already is county property.
It is.
County property now. It'll become the clerk property.
No.
He has to purchase it.
Correct.
Well, that's another thing.
County's going to have
that's the next.
All I'm saying is, if it is abandoned, then you have to acquire an easement from the county to use that road, correct? That's the way the process will have to work, because they can't...
Or
the county grant deeds the property to Mr. DeClercq.
Correct. They have to do that.
And then he assumes all the liability and the property tax.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They have to do that through auction, though. They can't just...
That's right.
Grant it.
Yeah.
So between the time, this is what I'm getting at, between the time it's abandoned, and clerk purchased the property, to use that, he will have to have an easement from the county.
He's gotta have some kind of legal document, yeah.
I would say he, right now, has a prescriptive easement, as does Mr. Davies, because of that.
It's a public road, you cannot claim a prescriptive right on a public road. I went through that battle with the Sheep Rock Cattle Trail.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, so anyway, I guess that's all, you've probably discussed that with somebody at the county level, right? So they abandon the road, they give you an easement, and that gives you time then to acquire the property on both sides of Bailey Hill. Is that how it's gonna work?
We don't know that.
I can answer that, Commissioner Beal.
And maybe this is not our concern.
No, it is, because that's part of my line of questioning also, because I think if we do approve this, it needs to be added into this project, that should the supervisors vote to abandon, at the same time, there needs to be language available that grants the clerks and Davies access, the easement, at the same time, so there is no hiccup when it is abandoned, that ensures they still have legal access to their property.
Well, there's gonna be a time lapse, right, between the...
There shouldn't be, though, that's my concern. I don't wanna create issues for the clerks being able to access their property via an abandoned county road that's owned by the county, the property.
Okay, but it's abandoned, then they can't use that road unless there's an easement or they acquire the property, right? That, there's quite a time lapse between that.
County Council has a comment.
Well, I believe what would and should happen is that at the time, if the county approves abandoning the road at the Board of Supervisors level, there would be negotiations over sale of the property from the road. Title then eventually would transfer, probably with a boundary line adjustment, merge into their property if it's sold outright. The road abandonment wouldn't take place immediately. The terms and conditions set by the Board of Supervisors in terms of transferring the road would have to occur, and then the transfer to the clerks would take place. It could be by easement. I sense it would probably be by fee type of road.
Don't we need to have language in there that ensures that that happens? Because otherwise,
well, I mean,
there is the wild hair potential.
Right.
The clerks all of a sudden get shut out of accessing their own property, and we don't want that to happen.
Well, I'm sure one term and condition would be, well, that it would be forced. First of all, I think I heard it said that the road would be up for public bidding. Under the Streets and Highways Code, the Board of Supervisors do not have to set it for public bidding. They can sell it on their own terms and conditions, which would be probably for fair market value to the only property that would make sense, which is the clerks. Second, we're here now for the Planning Commission to find whether the abandonment conforms with the general plan. We're just here for that limited purpose. I would recommend the board the commission just stick with, whether it conforms with the general plan rather than trying to do future property transfer terms at this time.
Well, general plan and in the public interest, right?
It's
not just general plan, right?
It's mainly the general plan, but as Mr. Phelps has gone on, I mean, there are two other findings regarding non-motorized use of the road and whether there's beneficial public use at this time.
Just the last thing I have, I see that the county gets $2,868 a year to maintain that road. That's a moneymaker for the county. They don't spend $2,800 a year.
They haven't spent any money on in 20 years.
Yeah.
30 years.
You pay that money?
40 years.
You pay that?
No.
2,800?
The county gets that from the
county
state.
Gets it from the state. That's the portion of revenue for that stretch of road that the county receives from the state.
Oh, I don't know, when are we going to abandon the old dump road out there, the north end of Big Green Road? I've got the same problem as you. Actually, we could have a furniture sale out there right now.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Phelps, you had your hand up
before we got to. I was going to say, there is no requirement under state law to have to purchase the land at all. The Board of Supervisors has discretion to simply give the land, if it so chooses, to them, to the applicants. And then the actual, I'm not sure where you got the 2,800, but the actual number is $3,668.
Ooh, 3,000?
It's not more, but I'm wondering if you have an older version of the staff report, perhaps. Because my staff report numbers are different.
I have the 3,668.
Okay.
Okay, other questions by commissioners before I run down my list?
So this, what we're going to do, we abandon the road. So council is saying, that's our scope of work today.
That's it.
We're not worried about if the Board of Supervisors then take our recommendation. They proceed ahead with all the legal issues that come up with that. Liability, transfer of property, property taxes, that whole thing. We don't deal with any of that.
We don't deal with it, but I think we certainly have the, it's within our purview to send with this recommendation concerns that we think the supervisors need to address, because as a planning project, and we are the planning commission, there are a couple things in here where I have questions that I do not want precedent set that would be a negative impact on a private property.
Oh, no, you don't want them stuck with the liability if it's abandoned.
So that I've got a series of questions that need to be addressed.
Right.
I'm not opposed to the abandonment, don't get me wrong, right. But there are things I'm looking out for so that the clerks don't get left hung out to dry.
Right. That's it. For us. So I guess that's what's the chain of events that have to take place so that they're protected.
Correct.
And the county's protected.
Correct.
That's the big issue.
Mr. Phelps.
Yes, abandonment will likely occur at the same time as transfer of title to the property. So that won't be an issue, even though we bring it to the board, and the board at the next hearing will simply be making a determination on whether or not to move forward with the project. And then we'd probably have another meeting after that to update the board as to whether or not it's been transferred, but that road itself would not be abandoned until the property was transferred in title to the applicant or whoever buys the property.
Is this boundary a unique parcel, or I heard you say something about needing a BLA to incorporate it into their existing parcels? Like,
no.
How does that work?
They wouldn't need to do anything. It would just become theirs.
But is it its own unique parcel
then,
right now?
Okay. Yes.
That's good.
Why wouldn't it need BLA? You're adding property to a parcel.
No, they're getting a separate parcel.
They would acquire a
separate
parcel.
Oh, that's just
parcel.
Leave it a separate parcel.
Yeah,
it's a legal
it's
parcel right now.
That leads me right into where I want to go with the question. Go ahead.
Okay. You want me to go ahead, or do you want to go
well,
ahead?
Well, this is probably, I'm looking into crystal ball, which we shouldn't do. And I'm just thinking of the value of the parcel with the house on it, down slope, that you purchased. At some time in the future, I know I'm looking way in the future, when we're all gone, and all of a sudden there's a parcel there with a house on it, and now you're going to have to go back and recreate some kind of an easement to it if you ever want to dispose of it. Sell it as a separate parcel. Or are you going to take the whole Marianne and make it one big, huge parcel? That's just something to think about.
Yeah, they're already separate parcels.
Right, but so if we abandon the road,
okay.
Now there's no deeded easement to that parcel if you ever decide that you need or want to dispose of that parcel. You or your heirs, or if you sell the whole thing. Just something to think about.
Mm-hmm. One quick question. Prescriptive rights do not apply here.
Not on public owned land,
okay.
Only on privately owned land.
Okay.
Yes.
And
Blair corrected me on that.
That's right.
Okay, so can I run down my list of questions now?
Yeah.
You're asking me?
Sure.
Yes, sir.
I'm just looking left and right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Mr. Phelps, first one I have. Caltrans comments on no gates. I, and you all know where I sit on this, would tell Caltrans to take a long walk off a short pier. When the county, should the county abandon this, and ownership potentially becomes the clerk. The clerks have every right to put a gate in on that road going north and going south, wherever the hell they want to put a gate. That language, ex-nay, doesn't go forward. Private property owner has the right to limit access on a private road, period. That's number one. Primary reason being liability. Second being troublemakers, as Mr. DeClercq clearly stated in his testimony. Second item on my list, and this one really gives me the heartburn. And I'm surprised it came from CAL FIRE. I get why they said what they did. But CAL FIRE's language that was presented in our packet, that should the bridge transfer to private ownership, i.e. DeClercq, that they would be solely responsible for all maintenance and upkeep of said bridge, creates an issue for me, because currently that bridge does not meet 4290 regs. So what CAL FIRE is saying is that, and this goes to what Commissioner Hart just mentioned, access to that house at that lower end, if that gets sold, the owner or purchaser of that property basically is going to become solely responsible for bringing that bridge up to 4290 regs, which is going to be a hefty deal, not to mention all the permits involved, even though it is a perennial stream. You're bringing in CDFW, Army Corps, etc. That bridge presents an issue, and I would feel really, really hurt if we as a commission said the clerks are solely responsible now for maintaining that bridge up to 4290 regs, etc., from here to perpetuity. I don't think that's fair to the property owner. That's a mess.
That's not in the request, though. That's not in the
It's in resolution. The comments by CAL FIRE.
But it's not in the resolution.
The issue, though, I want to make sure the supervisors know that I, as a planning commissioner, do not support that language coming from CAL FIRE. We do not want to set that precedent.
All I'm saying is there's nothing in the resolution that requires your report.
I understand that, but it was correspondence from an agency. Supervisors are going to see it. We do not want to put the project proponents in a position financially, liability, where they become solely responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of that bridge.
Well, to those standards.
To those standards.
Because, I mean, if it is on the property,
it is what it is now, and that is all it should be held to.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is on their property. They would be responsible to maintain it, but to those standards,
to their standards, not to another. And that's the precedent that I want to make sure we're not setting here with CAL FIRE.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Question. If CAL FIRE wants this bridge to meet 4290 regs,
they can pay for it.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Okay, we already
heard of a damn helicopter.
Yeah,
you have another access across Cottonwood Creek.
Good question. That was my next one.
Anywhere?
Just the dirt road that comes through our. That's the one that comes from Hornbrook along, skirts along the side of the hill and comes up and ties in there just across the track.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to access your property that's on the east side of Cottonwood Creek, you have to come down that county road and go up there.
Yeah. questions have been, or statements of concern have been put on the record?
No, Caltrans have no, they're out of line.
Yeah.
Then why would they need to plow that road if it's private? Because that's what's been mentioned, it doesn't make sense.
They're talking probably about being able to park a plow when storms are coming in off the interstate, so then they, like they do at Forest Mountain, there's down in Lewis's. They can sit, but setting the requirement, no gates, no.
No.
Sheriff Powell?
Yes.
The gate issue, I don't think is an issue. They can simply move the gate down further on Bailey Hill Road if they want. Caltrans is just concerned that their trucks are gonna be able to turn around up at the top of the Nemo's road there, off the off ramp. So I think if any of those issues can be worked out with the applicant if the project does go forward.
I just don't want to place any additional responsibility on the project proponent because of a state agency overreaching.
My understanding on that, sir, simply is that once it's their property and fee title, it's their private property, they're going to do what they choose to do with it. The state agency has really, it's now a private road. The state agency is not going to be able to do much with that.
Okay. And so we're clear. What I heard you say, and I think I liked it, the process of this abandonment, should we approve and move it forward, and the supervisors adopt our findings and approve it, that there would be a time frame for which 1 month, 2 months out, official abandonment would likely occur at the same time as transfer of ownership, fee title, etc. So there would not be a window where it's abandoned, the clerks are put in potential liability or limited access. That is what is in the resolution.
That's not in the resolution, only because that's beyond the scope of the resolution, but okay. That is the procedure that we would follow. If you think of the reverse, the county also does not want to abandon a road and property and have no one else to pick that up, because now no one has access to it because the county's abandoned it. It's not a public road anymore. The county just owns it, but no one has access to it. So the reverse would be unhelpful to the public as well.
Okay. And the clerks are fine with that process?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I have no further questions, commissioners. Would entertain a motion.
Okay. We recommend to the Board of Supervisors to approve the proposed road abandonment RA-24-02 based on the recommended findings, and recommend the Board of Supervisors determine the project exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act in accordance with Section 15061B3 of the CEQA guidelines. What's the or for? Or, that's the denial, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is that adequate?
Commissioner Mello has moved.
Okay.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Veal seconds. Any further discussion? Is this road abandonment, is this a roll call?
You did a roll call, just going to the board.
Okay.
Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Commissioner Mello?
Yes.
Commissioner Lindler?
Yes.
Commissioner Veal?
Yes.
Chair Fowle?
Yes. Let the record show unanimous, 5 in the affirmative, and the recommendation is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for
being
here.
You guys
today.
Have been wonderful.
Yeah.
Appreciate your support.
All right. Next item. Okay, this is interesting. So we have the update on GP prior to the mining. And I see Bernadette coming up here, so that month, are you coming up for the GP update, or are we going to miss line for that?
Yeah, through the chair, we can switch the agenda to have the mining program presentation first, and then
okay.
we can do the jumping in at the end.
All right, so at purview of the chair, we are flipping two before one, and we will go to the mining program, excuse me, mining program update. Discussion regarding mine operators' non-compliance with terms of reclamation plan. And Ms. Bernadette, you are up.
All right, Bernadette Sisson, associate planner. So I thought it would be important to bring to you, being as we have so many new mining rec plan amendments coming before you in the near future, and then new mine operations that are being proposed and looked at. So we thought we'd give you an overview of kind of what we're doing with the county mining program. So currently there's 25 active mines that we inspect annually and we review, three of those being idle mines in that they're not currently in production. And then we have two that are under reclamation, and we still monitor those the same as if they were in production. So what we do each year includes one annual inspection, and that's normally done in the fall. We usually do them starting in September, Rachel and I. After the annual inspection, we review the estimated reclamation costs, because they have to maintain a financial assurance in a bond or a CD that covers the cost of the reclamation. So each year after the annual inspection, they do an estimate form and calculating those costs, and then we increase or decrease their bond or CD accordingly. So it's always supposed to be maintained. After that, every year they have to turn in an annual production report to the state. And that is, so for example, the 2024 report is due in June of 2025, so they have about 6 months to get that taken care of and send us a copy of that. With those reports, we look at those to make sure that they're in production. If they're not, we reach out to them to work with them if they're going to become an idle mine. So this is just the timeline on how we try and get all this done. So we do the on-site inspection, according to SMARA, should occur within 1 year of the previous inspection. Then after that, we have to get our inspection report, which includes photographs, details from the site visit, what we see as far as new disturbance, what they've been working on as far as any reclamation as they are mining, if that is occurring. If they're working on issues with invasive species, any sort of reseeding that might be going on, different things like that, if there's any erosion issues. It's a pretty detailed report. Most of our mines are pretty consistent, so they're, you know, we kind of can get those done fairly easy each year, because we have a good group of mine operators that will work with us and answer questions, and they give us a good site visit. They'll take us around the entire site, so it's been good. The cost estimate is the next thing that we work with, and that's actually the mine operator's responsibility to fill that out and get it to us within 30 days of the inspection. It's important that we get those within 30 days, because we then have to review that, and it's very detailed. These cost estimates include the cost of the seed, applying the seed after it's reclaimed, regrading to get the required slope that's in the rec plan. This is the cost for should the site be abandoned at that moment, what the county would have to pay to get it done. Because obviously we would have to hire someone to bring in equipment to do these things. So that's what this is.
The state give us any money for this?
No. So the county has an annual fee, and this is outlined in SMARA, and our fee should cover the cost for us to maintain the program. So our fee right now is $1,400 a year, and that should cover the cost for our staff to do all of these items. Should a operation become non-compliant within our fee outline, it says that we should charge for the cost of the notice of violation and any violation correspondence, mailings, and things like that. But I'll get into that more later on. So after the county staff prepares the inspection report, goes through the cost estimate, we get that submitted to the state for their review. If they agree that the cost estimate is adequate, then we move forward to that financial assurance, which is, you know, to get that bond or CD up to the amount to cover the cost if the county had to reclaim the site. And they only have 30 days to do this. Then we do the review of the annual production report each year. We are supposed to get that by July 1st. They do have adequate time, like I said, about 6 months to get that done. Sometimes it's hard for them to do that.
Now, under current process, I remember what it used to be back in the 70s, but do the mine operators prepare the production report and send it to the county, and the county sends it to the state now? Or does the mine operator send it directly to the state?
They send it directly to the state. They have the option to mail in, or there's an online submittal portal, and then we just get a copy of it.
Okay.
And they actually have the option, if they do it online, where they automatically send it to us if they direct them to do that. So they're trying to make it easier, I think. And then at the end, it's just our local fees, and I believe that our fiscal staff sends those invoices out like the first of the year, each calendar year. So that's basically what we work on each year. So some of the common issues that staff finds when we're working with our operators and owners is their reporting not getting done on time. The MRRC2 is the annual report that goes to the state for production. Not quite sure that's why that's an issue for them to get those done, because a lot of our mines are even done with any production before the end of the calendar year. So, I mean, they not only, they, just when they're done, they have to get it into the state. So they have months to do it, but sometimes they're just not getting those done. And so that should be, they should be getting a notice of violation for that. Again, that in that, if we do send a notice of violation, we're going to have to charge them for our time to send them these violations. So, and that's not something that the county has consistently really even done in years past. So this would be a new thing that operators would be seeing, but we are getting more pressure from the state to be doing more enforcement. It's another reason why I'm giving you guys a heads up. And then
so to be clear, if a production report is not filed in a timely manner by June of the subsequent year, does the state notify the mine operator, or does the state notify the county, and then the county notifies the operator?
Because we're the lead agency, we're the enforcement authority first, so they notify the...
So is the state timely in their notification to you that someone has not submitted a production report?
Yes, so with
like on June 2nd, are you getting a notice?
No, about 30 days after. Actually, I have it as an example in a later slide. I'll show it to you. So then we get to the cost estimate. And these are hard. I'm telling you, they're hard to review. They're hard to make them because they're expected to have the cost to rent. But for example, if part of their reclamation at that point would be to regrade a slope, you're looking at the cost of an operator. They have to get all those calculations. Yes, those calculations are available. But it's a lot of work. You have to figure out which piece of equipment will do the job, at what rate it will move that dirt, and how many hours you need to account for. And so it's a very time consuming. Additionally, they have to get cost estimates for their seed. And that's been difficult because a lot of the people they're reaching out to get these quotes, they know they're not selling the seed. So this is time for them to build these estimates for them, knowing that these people aren't buying the seed anytime soon, if at all. So they're asking for this and maybe not getting it. Otherwise, they're having to go online and try and find these native seeds a lot of the time from different places to purchase them online. And then they have to, get them to get an estimate that includes tax and shipping. So it's very time consuming, but so we do struggle with them getting these done on time.
So let me ask a question on that. Is there flexibility where the county, talking supervisors, could pass an ordinance that allowed a blanket general reclamation authorization for those doing reclamation on mines be allowed within a rec plan to simply reseed to a pasture mix, period?
So it's
meadow mix, whether and they could choose whether they want orchard, fescue, timothy, clover, whatever, but common seed that is commonly purchased, that is commonly planted in Siskiyou County.
They can do, it's just whatever's in their rec plan.
Okay.
So they just need
so
to
the
do...
rec plan, I get. The rec plan over history has said native plants. And that was one of the things that when the guy closed our mine that we had on our place, was held, literally had to plant juniper, and we don't want any of that freaking juniper planted there, but it was native, and so it was a rec plan.
Right. So that we recommend when these operators are struggling with this, that they relook at their rec plan, because maybe it's not, maybe it was done in 1970.
60.
Yeah, so they should look at that and have work with a botanist, make a recommendation. What in reality are they going to actually use the site for when it's closed? What really will they be needing to plant or wanting to plant? And so, but there's cost to that, right? Because you need to have a botanist to back you up or a biologist to back you up on what you're wanting to change in your rec plan. And you have to apply for it. So it's not always, a lot of times they prefer to just go along with what their cost estimate has to follow at that time, which is the existing rec plan. So then moving on, another issue that we have is our boundaries at our mines. A lot of these are very old approved mines, and the mapping is not great. A lot of them, their boundary markers were knocked down or maybe never set. The other boundary issue we have is depth. So there should be in a rec plan, and I'm not going to say they all have a very good description of how deep the mining can go, but we only go out once a year. So we go out, everything looks great. We go out a year later and it's like, where did you go? They can go deeper, they can go wider, so it's just, they have a lot of leeway to get themselves in trouble. And so one thing we've been trying to be very consistent with is asking them to be sure to get their boundary markers set, which they have to work with the surveyor on. Again, additional cost, but it's necessary. So that could potentially be something that you will be seeing as a violation, is them not setting boundary markers. Reclamation. So as they're mining, a lot of operators may not be moving towards what their reclamation is. They are mining for product and not mining with the reclamation in the back of the mine. So we're finding where slope, they're getting too steep to where they can't meet their final slope for reclamation. They're too close to their boundaries, so then it kicks them into having a reclamation plan amendment to change their boundaries so they can meet slope. They've got to move further away so they can get that slope they need. And then also, with their vegetation, they're not keeping up with invasive species as they're mining. They're kind of kicking it down the road. They'll deal with it during reclamation. And so they're not doing, some reclamation plans require that they have a site within their mining operation that they actually wash their rigs to get any invasive seeds off, and they deal with it then. But they're annually supposed to be pulling weeds, depending on what it is, and it's just not happening. And then a lot of them have where they should have some monitoring going on, either during or before reclamation, and that's normally a botanist or a biologist, and it's just something that they aren't doing. So Smara tells us how we how our enforcement is supposed to be. So first step is a notice of violation. We tell them how they can correct the issue, and we give them 30 days to correct it. If they don't, we normally work with people to do write up a stipulated order to comply, which because in most instances it might take more than 30 days for them to correct a violation. And if that's not the case, then we move on to an order to comply. So if they don't enter into the stipulated order to comply, or we just issue an order to comply.
And I want to add that this is what Smara says that we have to do, but we do a whole lot to avoid getting to the point of a notice of violation, because once it gets to that point, it's a lot more work on our end. So we do everything we can to get them in compliance without having to get to that step. A lot of emailing, reminders, calling, warnings, second warnings, and Bernadette, and it's unfortunately, has had to get to the point of violations and to get them to comply multiple times, actually, for particular ones.
It works, usually. But it's just more staff time that we, you know, And then the way our fee schedule is set up, if we do a violation, then we're adding more work for our fiscal staff to add cost to do a violation. So it's kind of making things difficult, but we're working on it. So just one thing to mention that I thought was important, that violations, they're not all like we said, some of them are just simply paperwork. Just get your paperwork done. You know, pushing that, they might get a violation for that. Sometimes it's difficult because they say their banks or their lenders, they aren't getting their financial assurances updated within the 30 days. They're struggling. They're telling me this. I don't work directly with the banks. I receive it. So I'm not hearing that from them. I'm hearing that from operators. So that's going to be something that I think both Rachel and I have tried to be very flexible with. Like, we'll look at the financial assurance. If there's any corrections, you know, send it back, have them do it again. But it's not something that I would say that we've been deadline 30 days on because of this issue. The other, like I mentioned earlier, they're having trouble getting these quotes and costs for their cost estimates. And then DMR has become, this is the state, has been sending us they've been notifying us when we need to do enforcement, which is new. I haven't had that until this year. We've had calls from them before asking about certain mine sites and asking what the county's plan but now we're getting it in writing that it should the county not enforce, they can enforce.
So before you continue, so does that lend you to believe, or do you know firsthand, is DMR sending individuals out to inspect mines when it's the county's responsibility, and then their people may be doing a drive-by like State Water Board and taking some pictures without fully understanding the situation, going back to Sacramento and then sending you a nasty letter, why aren't you enforcing this or this on this particular mine?
I would say no. What we've seen it come in on is paperwork issues first, primarily, and closed mines that the county, they're just not on our radar. So I brought you a long list of mines. That was DMR saying you guys
had a couple months ago.
Yep, we have
DMR stands for what?
Department of Mines and Reclamation.
So mine site issues, these are bigger issues, and so I would say they're more difficult to deal with is the boundary issues. not just not mining in accordance with their rec plan. Like some of them have phased mining and they're not working in that order. So these are bigger issues that are gonna require amendments to their plans. And it's difficult to get operators to see that, you know, it's necessary, that because then it becomes a violation that we can't correct anymore. The invasive plants, it is a problem because star thistle is everywhere. And it is so frustrating to mine operators. And I totally understand, we go up there and we're like, you're supposed to be doing something about this. But you look at everything surrounding them is all star thistle. So it's like a never ending battle for them that they don't know how to deal with. And trying to get them to understand, maybe if you get the botanist out here, if you get someone out here to...
They should hire a PCA.
Someone with the knowledge that to back up, we can do an amendment to get this out of your plan or change your plan. So it's just trying to get operators on board with doing these things. Again, can't get their seed mix. So they need to do a rec plan amendment. A lot of them have hydro seeding for their reclamation and they say they can't get the hydro seeder. They can't get it. And so what do we do there? Well, you do a rec plan amendment. But if they're ready to seed, then what do we do? So we're having to work with them on this. Also, again, just the lack of monitoring. They've got to get their experts out there. They've got to get their surveyors out there. They've got to get their botanists out there, because we are trained to go out and check the SMARA boxes. I'm not a botanist, biologist. Rachel knows a lot more plants than I do, and we do our best, and we make recommendations out there, and we tell them, you definitely should be looking at that. I'm not sure what it is, or you know, things that are taking over. But to get them to do it is violations, really, is what we're looking at. So this is an example of DMR oversight. Rick actually asked me to put this slide in for you guys. So this is just, these guys didn't fill out their annual report. And so DMR sent us this letter, and basically what it's saying is that if we don't send a notice of violation in 30 days, DMR can. And so what that looks like, I can't imagine what their fines are for this. So it's kind of forcing us to, because we do prefer and we do feel like direction from Planning Commission and the board is for the county to remain lead agency and to work with these people. And so that's forcing our hand to be a little bit more assertive with our notices of violation. So you're gonna be seeing them, and they could appeal because you guys are the appeal authority. So why aren't they sticking to their rec plans and complying with SMARA? So costs associated with their requirements and their plan. Some things are just really, like the hydro seeding is really expensive. It's part of their plan, they're supposed to do it. Why aren't they doing it? Because it's really expensive. The complicated reporting, you know, it's difficult, and some people have reached out and hired outside sources to do their cost estimates. They can be so complicated. Some of them, they don't really know if they want to mine anymore or not, but they don't want to give it up. So they're kind of just in limbo. So those ones are difficult to deal with too, because it is a viable site, but maybe just the owner isn't at a point in their life where they can mine it, but they want to keep it open. So we're trying to work with those. Another thing we're seeing, it's kind of like locking up the competition. So depending on the situation, if they slow roll their reclamation, nobody can move in there and reopen that site. So it might be more beneficial in their eyes to go slow on reclaiming, so then another operator doesn't move in. So, because we do have a lot of mines out here that are, several mines are operated by one operator. So they'll be idle, and then, so it's something that we have to work around. So it's just something you should be aware of. It's still part of the process. It's something that they do, and we have to work with it. The costs associated with the reclamation plan amendment, it's just expensive of how they look at it. You know, our fees are low, but it's depending on what the amendment is, who do they have to hire to help them prepare that? Survey maps, depending on the situation, botanists, because they're going to be outsite and they're going to be writing on site and writing a report. And then a lot of them, they have this mindset that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than seek permission. So, oops, I went outside of my boundaries, we'll just fix it later. And then we could have just done the amendment, done what they want, planned it out, and come here for approval for an amendment to expand their boundaries or something. But then now we're coming in and saying now we have to expand the boundaries because of this, and now we have to fix X, Y, and Z to get a slope stability report done and all these complicated things when we could have just proposed an expansion. And then we just, over the past years, the county has had staff turnover. We haven't been assertive in our violations and noticing, and so they're used to that. They're used to that, you know, oh, it's been 60 days, what's really going to happen? So we have to be more consistent. So what it looks like is if they don't comply with with their stipulated order to comply or an order to comply, our fines are up to $5,000 per day from the date of non-compliance. So that's wide open. Like, so us as staff have to figure out how much we're going to fine them. We don't have a fine schedule. We don't have a fine set for if it's just simply them not turning in their annual report and paying the state fees, if it's for our fees, our late fee, our annual fees, or, you know, or if they mined outside of their boundaries, are we going to charge them $5,000 a day until they file a rec plan amendment? I mean, no. So we're having, because we don't have a history of fines being applied, so this is something new that we're going to have to work on and figure out.
What authority do you use to levy such a fine? Do you have to, is that
SMARA.
SMARA. And have you ever issued a fine that large?
No, the recent fine that we issued was $200 a day, I believe.
And have you collected?
Yes.
Through the chair, I have a question. If they are unable to pay to remind, and then you fine them because they can't pay, that's a little counterproductive, don't you think?
Right.
It's digging the chicken hole deeper.
Yep, and so that's where we get into similar to the Timberhits situation where we found that they are not financially capable to reclaim the site, and that's where we end up. Where the county was reclaiming a mine. So yeah, exactly that.
So they get the mine, can the county take the mine, you know, or the property, if for non-payment?
No, I believe the only avenue would potentially be a lien if their financial assurance wasn't enough to reclaim the mine.
Put a lien on the property.
Yeah, but it's not an avenue that we've gone down before.
I don't blame you, thank you.
Go ahead. I do want to add though that a lot of the things that we see, it's not the operators being financially incapable, it's that they just don't want to. They don't want to put up the money for the face to, you know, to equal the face in their fam, because it's thousands and thousands of dollars. So, you know, they try to do everything that they possibly can to avoid paying that money. So there are some that are financially incapable. Bernadette has a couple that are definitely have some issues going on that don't relate to lack of willingness, but I think that a lot of our operators are more than capable of paying the little fees that we have or paying for the cost to reclaim. It's just, like I said, they don't want to.
So
money out of their pocket right now, and they would rather keep it in their pocket, which we get, but that's not the rules that we follow.
I can relate to that. Just go to the grocery store.
So, one thing maybe would be good to mention is that our financial assurances, what their bonds or CDs that they're putting up, they range anywhere. I think the lowest one we have is probably in the mid, like $25,000 range, all the way up to, what's your high one?
I have a 300 something thousand on one of mine.
That's
yeah. So they vary significantly.
I mean, that's nickels and dimes.
Say that again?
That's nickels and dimes.
Yeah.
That's not a bond like $3.5 million.
No. In our county, our biggest is still really small.
That's why they're having issues at the banks. And I hate to say
this. Oh, yeah.
They're having the issue at the banks to get these because they're so small.
Yes.
It would be quicker, and you could do it in 30 days if it were 1 million plus. But as soon as you get down under a half million, I'm going through the same thing with an operating loan.
Yes.
Because I don't want to borrow that much. It's taken me forever.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to go out and borrow another 1.5 million like I did several years ago, I'd have it within 15 days. And that's the way the lending is now, and that's why they're having issues. And you're probably hearing it's taken 60 to 90 days to get these bonds done.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. So when we're issuing our notices of violation, we want you to know that if they're not compliant, so, and they want to appeal this, the public hearing must be held within 45 days, unless they agree with us that they would let that go further. So just so you know, that will likely require a special meeting for you because of public hearing noticing deadlines. We wouldn't have time to hit the regular meeting date. So,
well, it depends when staff wants to file it. You can file it so 45 days lands on it. I'm just...
We will do our best. So a quick summary, and I appreciate your patience with this. So the Planning Commission is the approval authority for use permits and reclamation plans, which regulate the surface mine. The Planning Commission also is the review authority for appeals to SMARA violations. It's important to keep up to date on the challenges staff encounters with established mines to better understand why recommendations are made for new proposed mines that come before you. Staff is additionally requesting direction regarding fair and effective enforcement when it becomes necessary. So we would appreciate any feedback on you. I told you that fine range and just your thoughts on, you know, the issues that we brought up. Just some feedback, because we would like, if there is an appeal that comes before you, we would like that what we have written in our violations and our orders to comply has been fair but firm.
Is this a picture of a mine in Siskiyou County?
This one right here?
That's the cinder pit, isn't it?
If this is the Du Bois cinder pit, yeah, all the photos are from mines in Siskiyou County.
Where's this located?
Highway 97.
Yeah.
And the first one was Moore's, taken from Farmer's Ditch property. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my favorite. It's so beautiful. I have so many good pictures down there.
Have you been out there lately?
Who's the second one that looked like east of the L face there? Who's that?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Hart,
do you know? Oh, I know where that is. Whose is that?
That's the Hart East pit.
Yeah,
that's the Hart. We seem to know.
I've used this pit because it's a really good active site with a lot of equipment, with an active cut and some processed material. So this is the best photo to kind of really show a lot of activity going on a site.
It looks a lot different.
It's been a year. Absolutely, things change a lot.
Don't look like that now.
Okay, so you're looking for feedback from the commission on this.
Yes.
It is 10:19. Let's take a 5-minute break, and we'll come back with a smorgasbord of questions and potential recommendations.
Appreciate it.